Exodus chapter 13 this morning. We're going to read through the whole chapter and see if we can't hit this. We've entitled the message, Beginning the Adventure with God. But as they begin this adventure, there's a need, there's an enforcement by God to look beyond His works so that they can see His ways. God is doing something and He's doing it now. But He wants them to remember forever what He does, because He is the God that He is. Exodus chapter 13, beginning in verse 1, we'll read the entire chapter. The Lord said to Moses, "Consecrate to me all the firstborn, whatever is the first to open the womb among the people of Israel, both of man and of beast, is mine." Then Moses said to the people, "Remember this day in which you came out from Egypt, out of the house of slavery, for by a strong hand the Lord brought you out from this place. No leavened bread shall be eaten. Today, in the month of Abib, you are going out. And when the Lord brings you into the land of the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Hivites, the Jebusites, which He swore to your fathers to give to you, a land flowing with milk and honey, you shall keep this service in this month. 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread, and on the seventh day there shall be a feast to the Lord. Unleavened bread shall be eaten for 7 days. No leavened bread shall be seen with you, and no leavened bread shall be seen with you in all your territory. You shall tell your son on that day, 'It's because of what the Lord did for me when I came out of Egypt,'" putting words in their mouth. This happened to me when I came out of Egypt. "And it shall be to you as a sign on your hand and as a memorial between your eyes, that the law of the Lord may be in your mouth. For with a strong hand the Lord has brought you out of Egypt. You shall therefore keep this statute at its appointed time from year to year. When the Lord brings you into the land of the Canaanites, as He swore to you and your fathers, and shall give it to you, you shall set apart to the Lord all that first opens the womb. All the firstborn of your animals that are males shall be the Lord's. Every firstborn of a donkey you shall redeem with a lamb, or if you will not redeem it, you shall break its neck. Every firstborn of man among your sons you shall redeem. And when in time to come your son asks, 'What does this mean?' you shall say to him, 'By a strong hand the Lord brought us out of Egypt from the house of slavery. For when Pharaoh stubbornly refused to let us go, the Lord killed all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, both the firstborn of man and the firstborn of animals. Therefore I sacrifice to the Lord all the males that first opened the womb, but all the firstborn of my sons I redeem. It shall be as a mark on your hand or frontlets between your eyes, for by a strong hand the Lord brought us out of Egypt.'" When Pharaoh let the people go, God did not lead them by the way of the land of the Philistines, although that was near. For God said, "Lest the people change their minds when they see war and return to Egypt." But God led the people around by the way of the wilderness toward the Red Sea. The people of Israel went up out of the land of Egypt equipped for battle. Moses took the bones of Joseph with him, for Joseph had made the sons of Israel solemnly swear, saying, "God will surely visit you, and you shall carry up my bones with you from here." And they moved on from Succoth and encamped at Etham on the edge of the wilderness. The Lord went before them by day in a pillar of cloud to lead them along the way, and by night in a pillar of fire to give them light, that they might travel by day and by night. The pillar of cloud by day, the pillar of fire by night, did not depart from before the people. I don't know if you have weeks that don't look exactly the way you thought they were going to look. But this has been one of those weeks for me that just didn't quite look exactly the way I thought it was going to look. There's several different things that were going on. You think of yesterday, Chris, you got a text or call from your mom, "Pray for Dad." Boy, where does that fit in? That doesn't look like forward. It kind of looks like backward. I've got Kyle home for a couple weeks here, and he didn't have the job that he was banking on for this time of year. So, okay, that doesn't work the way we thought it was going to work. Why don't you buff the floor downstairs? Great. Get everything out of there. Everything's put away. Everything's mopped. Everything's cleaned. Get the buffers out. Start to buff the floor. Get the second buffer out and click, click, click. All right, that one doesn't work. Go down, rent a different buffer. Bring it over. It doesn't work quite right. It gets the job done. It just doesn't work real well. Okay. And just one thing after another. My wife has been sick all week. She's gearing up towards today. She's sick. She's got to be home. Where can I get the directories out? Everything's communicating back and forth until yesterday afternoon, and I'm getting ready to print it. Computers drop. Wow. Man. If you were to take your view of God and base your view of God based solely on His works, what would this week say to you about your God? If all you saw was this week's work of God in your life, what would your view of God be? Man, He got that one backwards, that one backwards, that one upside down. This one doesn't work. Not going to say it out loud, but you don't want to know my vision right now, okay? That's why it's so important for us to be able to look beyond God's works to God's ways. Go, if you would, in your Bibles to Psalm 103. Keep your hands here. We're coming right back. But go to Psalm chapter 103. We've looked at these verses before, but they're important for us. Psalm 103, verse 8 is a verse that you should be familiar with. The Lord is merciful and gracious, slow to anger and abounding in steadfast love. It's the name of God that's given in Exodus chapter 34, verse 6. It's the name of God. It's who God is. Look back up at verse 6. The Lord works righteousness. The Lord works justice for everyone who's oppressed. Now look at verse 7. The Lord has made known His ways to Moses, His acts, His works to the people of Israel. And then it recites the name of God. Moses understood who God was because he understood God's ways. But Israel, with their eyes fixed only on the here and now, their eyes fixed only on the present circumstances, only ever saw God's works. And when the works didn't line up with their expectations, God didn't line up with their expectations. You ever been there? Boy, this didn't play out the way I thought it was supposed to play out. In fact, this was in my life, and I was banking on it to play out differently. Where's God? Doesn't God care? Maybe God doesn't know. Or maybe He does know, and He doesn't want to be bothered with me. As we come to this story, God is in the middle of doing something that's amazing. And if we would be like Peter at this moment, they'd say, hey, let's build tabernacles here. Let's camp out. But the whole point is they're on their way out. They can't camp out as they're on their way out. But as they begin this adventure, they're stepping out in faith. But stepping out in faith is never an end in itself. It's only the beginning of the adventure of a lifetime. That adventure is beginning to get to know their God. And at the very beginning, God's bringing them out of Egypt. We had a testimony this morning. What's God done in your life? Let me take you back to the time where God brought me out of Egypt. I'm so thankful that God rescued me from my sin, where God saved me from my sin, where God started a brand new story in my life. Been easy ever since then? Not on your life. But it started the adventure of a lifetime. And as they're stepping out in faith, and God is doing more than they thought God could do for them, as He's doing more than they thought possible, God says, now listen, I want you to do something. Look at your text there this morning, Exodus chapter 13. The Lord said to Moses, consecrate to me all the firstborn. Whatever's first to open the womb among the people of Israel, both of man and beast, is mine. And Moses said to the people, remember this day in which you came out from Egypt, out of this house of slavery. For by a strong hand the Lord brought you out of this place. No leavened bread shall be eaten. Today, in the month of Abib, you are in the midst of going out. What I'd like us to see this morning is that there's two areas or two arenas in which the adventure with God always begins. The first is that God always begins His work in our life by bringing us with a strong hand out of Egypt. He brings us out of that place of bondage, out of that place of slavery. There's a direction. It's forward. It's out of. It's out of the chains. It's out of the darkness. And we've sung about that several different times this morning. Adam did a great job in picking out songs that refer to the redemption that paid the price to free me from my sin, to free me from my chains. God's direction always begins here. He brings us with a strong hand out of Egypt. And they're told first that they should remember. Verse 3, Moses tells them, remember. Now the word has both the idea of bringing to your mind a cognitive act of remembering. But it also has the same idea of built in with it, a ritual act of commemorating. So last week as we had the Lord's Supper, we remembered that Jesus died. Jesus says, do this in remembrance of me. Remembering. Okay. Thinking about Jesus died on the cross to take away my sin. Jesus paid the perfect price that I could never pay. I'm remembering. But also, He called us to do this. Do this while you remember. Commemorate what I've done. Go through the act of passing the bread. Go through the act of that bread being broken. Go through the act of picking up that cup and drinking from it. Go through the act of commemorating so you can remember. Two concepts, one word. They're told that they're supposed to remember. Second, they're told what they're supposed to remember. Verse 3, remember this day in which you've come out from Egypt. You've come out of the house of slavery. Verse 4, this is the day that you are going out. Remember when you went out. Remember where you were. Remember the chains. Remember the bondage. Remember the cries. Remember the agony. Remember the confusion. And remember that I brought you out. That's what I want you to remember. They're told why they're supposed to remember. For by a strong hand, Yahweh brought you out. By a strong hand, the God who is changed your life. You didn't do it. You didn't turn over a new leaf. God did it. God reached down into His creation, into your life. And it's significant that in just a few verses, it says, when your child asks of you, why do you do this? You're supposed to put it in the first person. This is what God did for me. I came out of Egypt. I was brought out by the hand of a God who reached into my life. The only God who's alive. The only God who is. He stands in distinction to all the gods that aren't. This God who's alive reached into my life. That's why I'm supposed to remember. But the focus of this section isn't just on that they should remember or exactly what they're supposed to remember, even why they're supposed to remember. The focus of this section becomes how they're supposed to remember. And there's two ways in which they're supposed to remember. The first is this. They're supposed to commemorate God's holiness by removing the leaven from their midst. We've looked at this before, how that the Passover and the Feast of Unleavened Bread are they're not two separate holidays. They're two separate parts of a single celebration. Passover,
the redemption part, the Feast of Unleavened Bread, the consecration part. It's a mark of maturity, Wiersbe says, when we learn that freedom is a tool to build with, not a toy to play with. Freedom involves accepting responsibility. And that's what God wants his people to understand as they're coming out. Look what he says there in Exodus chapter 13, verse 1. The Lord said to Moses, "Consecrate me all the firstborn, whatever's first to open the womb among the people of Israel, both of man and of beast, is mine." The idea of consecrating, kadosh, means to set apart, to render holy. And what makes this people holy is their holy God. They're separated, which is what that word consecrate means. They're set apart to a God who is different, to a God who himself is set apart. And we've seen this connection, that God saves his people in order that he might set his people apart, in order to do works that reflect their set apart God. The focus of this section then becomes commemorating God's holiness. God is a different kind of God, and he requires his people to be a different kind of people. And so he says, "I want you to remember that I've brought you out of this slavery." Now look at verse 3. "No leavened bread shall be eaten." Verse 5, "When the Lord brings you into the land of the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Hivites, the Jebusites, which he swore to your fathers to give you, a land flowing with milk and honey, you shall keep this service in its month. 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread, and on the seventh day there shall be a feast to the Lord. Unleavened bread shall be eaten for 7 days. No leavened bread shall be seen with you. No leaven shall be seen with you in all your territory." God wants them to put away that connection to the past, the leaven, the yeast, that had to grow and comes with them forward for the baking of bread for the present. God says, "I want you to separate yourself from everything that has gone before. All the ties, all the connections to Egypt, it's gone. Set it aside, because like yeast, it permeates every aspect of your life." And so God draws them this picture that helps them to understand their holiness in light of their holy God. It's interesting that this commemoration is supposed to be observed particularly when the Lord brings them into the land. It's a sacred ceremony in a sacred place that reminds them that they themselves are sacred. It's meant to be observed annually. Verse 5, he says, "You shall keep this service in this month." Every time this month comes around, you need to keep this service. You must commemorate my holiness and your holiness because of your connection to me. Verse 10, "You shall therefore keep this statute at its appointed time from year to year." Every time the calendar brings this month around, in every year that comes about, I want you to observe this annually. I want you to observe it carefully. Look again at verse 7. "Unleavened bread shall be eaten for 7 days." Then he makes this statement, "No leavened bread shall be seen with you." Seems pretty conclusive. But in case they miss the point, "And no leaven shall be seen with you in all your territory." In this sacred place that I, your sacred God, have given to you, my sacred people, there must be no leaven. You are totally cut off from the past. It's meant to be observed verbally. Verses 8 and 9, he says, "You shall tell your son on that day, 'This ceremony is because of what the Lord did for me when I came out of Egypt.'" That is, I've been removed from Egypt, and now I've taken pains to remove Egypt from me. "And it shall be a sign to you on your hand as a memorial between your eyes, that the law of the Lord may be in your mouth." He says, here's what I want you to do. When your son asks, "Why do we do this?" I want you to tell them, this is what we do because I've brought you out. I've taken you out of the land, and I want that land with all of its practices and all of its tarnishments to be taken out of you. And I want my word to flow from your lips, which can only come because it abides in your hearts. And God says, I want you to observe this ceremony verbally. The second way in which God requires them to commemorate is he requires them to commemorate not only his holiness through the removing of the leaven, but he also requires them to commemorate his grace by redeeming the firstborn. We find this in this next section, verses 11 down through 16. Redemption becomes a theme. Reichen says it this way. One reason God gave his people so many ways to commemorate the Exodus, the Passover, the Feast of Unleavened Bread, the consecration of the firstborn, was so that they would have plenty of opportunities to give their children the facts of salvation. In fact, to study Exodus is to learn the theology of salvation. The true story of Israel's escape from Egypt demonstrates many great doctrines of the Christian faith. The Exodus gave Israel nearly a complete theological education. Hardly a single major doctrine was left out. One pillar of soteriology is especially introduced in this chapter. That is, the doctrine of redemption. Redemption, the word is pada. It refers to a trade-off whereby a substitute is offered to meet the demand. God's demand. Pada, redemption. A price that needs to be paid. When you think of redemption, you're thinking of something that satisfies a requirement, something that fits the bill, something that merits the transaction and causes a worthy transition from the ownership of one to the ownership of another. And when we think of redemption, it's a rich term. B.B. Warfield calls it one of the greatest terms with which to remember Christ. He says this of the title Redeemer. It gives expression not merely to our sense that we have received salvation from him, but also to our appreciation of what it cost him to procure this salvation for us. It's the name specifically of the Christ of the cross. Whenever we pronounce that title, Redeemer, the cross is placarded before our eyes. Our hearts are filled with loving remembrance. Not only that Christ has given us salvation, but that he paid a mighty price for it. Redemption. This is meant to be a complete redemption. In verse 12, God says, all that first opens the womb belongs to me. Verse 12, all the firstborn of your animals belong to me. Verse 13, every firstborn of a donkey. Verse 13, every firstborn of man among your sons. God says, everything, 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 the first of everything belongs to me. I own it. I own it. And so it either required killing or it required killing something else in its place. But the whole point of this is that this belongs to God. It cannot be used by you for your own benefit. It belongs to God. And further, the point of consecrating the firstborn is really to show that the whole family, that all the offspring, girls as well as boys, everyone that succeeds from that womb belongs in fact to God. It's a first fruits offering to God. Now this consecration has two directions. It worked on behalf of the parents. It was, verse 16, Moses says, this shall be as a mark, parents, on your hand. Frontlets, parents, between your eyes. Because by a strong hand, God has brought us, this generation, out of Egypt. And consecrating the children, this act of consecration, act of redemption, this ritual would help the parents to understand that their children really did not belong to themselves, but they belonged, in fact, to God. But the second direction in which this redemption, this act of consecration worked, was upon the children. Again, this act or this ceremony is meant to be explained verbally. Verse 14, when in time to come your son asks you, what does this mean? You shall say to him, by a strong hand the Lord brought us out of Egypt from the house of slavery. For when Pharaoh stubbornly refused to let us go, the Lord killed all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, both the firstborn of man and the firstborn of animals. Therefore I sacrifice to the Lord all the males that first opened the womb, but all the firstborn of my sons I redeem. I pay a price so that they can live. The price required by God is the life of an innocent, a perfect innocent. And that price has been paid, my son, for you. You, because you belong to God. Reagan says this, in Exodus, redemption was closely connected to consecration. The point of being redeemed was to be set apart for the service of God. If a son understood this, it would help to shape his entire life. The son would learn from this that he had a purpose in life, that someone had paid the price for his life, that now he belonged to God. Brueggemann reminds us that the children of the community must come to know this story as their very own, of being bought at a terrible price. The terrible price bespeaks the inordinate passion of God and the deep expectation of new obedience that belongs to this liberation. When God brings his people out at the beginning of this adventure of a lifetime, and they step out in faith, they step out in obedience, he gives them two ceremonies that together, the removal of the unleavened bread and the redemption of the firstborn, together they hold in balance the twin realities of God's holiness and God's grace, of God's judgment and God's mercy, of God's curse and God's blessing. With a strong hand, God brought them out of Egypt. What I'd like you to see secondly this morning is that with a kind heart, he led them into the wilderness. God led his people into the wilderness. Look at verse 17. When Pharaoh let the people go, God did not lead them by the way of the land of the Philistines, although that was near. Verse 18. But God led the people around by the way of the wilderness toward the Red Sea. Why did God do that? Well, he gives us a little bit of an explanation there, but what I want us to see is that as God leads his people into the wilderness, he visits his people with his permanent presence. Look down at verse 19. Moses took the bones of Joseph with him, for Joseph had made the sons of Israel solemnly swear, saying, God will surely visit you, and you shall carry up my bones with you from here. God visits his people. Joseph had said back in Genesis 50 that God would visit his people. The idea of visiting means to be present, to attend to inspect, to deal with. And for some 400 years, it seemed as though God had not been with his people. He was not observing. He was not attendant. He was not with. The brutal Egyptians were with. The brutal Egyptians were attending to and taking advantage, but it didn't seem as though God was on the scene at all. And Joseph told his fellow Israelites before he died, he told his brothers, he told his family, he says, God will surely come close again. Come close in remembrance. Come close in blessing. And when he does, I want you to take my bones with you, because God is on the move again, and he's on the move for you. When God visits his people, the present has changed because God has come near. You see how Joseph said it there in verse 19? God will surely visit you. I guarantee it. Even as surely as I'm dying, God will come and you will carry my bones out. Please carry my bones out, because I am a part of what God has been doing, and I want to be a part of what God is yet to do. I want you to see down in verse 22, God's presence represented in the pillar of cloud by day and the pillar of fire by night did not depart from before the people. God came, God saw, God attended to, God intervened, God visited, God showed up, and he didn't go away. He stayed there with his people by day, by night. We have it here in the ESV that he did not depart from before the people. Alter translates it, he would not budge from before the people. We have here the precursor of Deuteronomy 31 when Moses tells Joshua, he will never leave you nor forsake you. It's reminded to Joshua again in Joshua chapter 1, 5, will never leave you nor forsake you. It's quoted to us in the New Testament in Hebrews chapter 13. He will never leave you nor forsake you. When God brings you into the wilderness, it's not because he's forgotten you. It's because he's going with you. He's bringing you by a path for which he's preparing you for the future, by which he's preparing you for the future. It's his very presence. It's the visible symbol of the presence of Yahweh in their midst. It's the angel of his presence, Isaiah 63 verses 8 and 9 says. It's the Shekinah glory. It bespeaks the coming of Jesus Christ, Emmanuel, who would draw near. It bespeaks the coming of the Holy Spirit, who would reside in us as the temple of God. Never, ever, ever to leave us. The present is changed because God has showed up. The future is certain because God keeps his words. These bones of Joseph, they become a testimony that Joseph, in fact, banked on the right God. All of Egypt was banking on a whole pantheon of gods that were not any gods at all. Joseph, even as he's dying, banks everything on the one God that is. And these bones become a testimony to the work of the faithfulness of God. Wiersbe says, Israel saw Joseph's coffin as a reminder that God has his times and God keeps his promises. Joseph was dead, but he was bearing witness to the faithfulness of God. When God leads his people into the wilderness, not only does he visit his people with his permanent presence, but he leads his people into purposeful progress. Look back at verse 17 once again. When Pharaoh let the people go, God did not lead them by the way of the land of the Philistines, although that was near. Because, God said, lest the people change their minds when they see war and return to Egypt. But instead, God led the people around by the way of the wilderness toward the Red Sea. And the people of Israel went up out of the land of Egypt equipped for battle. Verse 20, they moved on from Succoth and encamped at Etham on the edge of the wilderness. The Lord went before them by day and by night to give them light so that they might travel by day and by night. God's continued presence brings with it God's continued concern. When God shows up, when God visits his people, he takes inventory, he sees, he attends to, and he takes up the cause, and he begins to be on the move on behalf of his people. And as he resides with them in a permanent fashion, he does so because of his permanent concern for his people. And he says there in verse 17, here's why I'm bringing them the direction that I'm bringing them. Because I don't want them to change their minds. The word is repent. I don't want them to go the opposite direction of the way that they need to go. I don't want them to go back. And as the term is used here, it says here in the ESV, the people of Israel went up out of the land equipped for battle. Now, there's some question as to exactly what that phrase means. It says they weren't ready for battle, but they were equipped for battle. The term has the idea of being armed or coming out perhaps in armed formation. The idea is that when God brought his people out, they were in fact God's army. They were in fact God's host. And the general is leading his army into battle, but he knows what they're capable of, and he knows where their hearts lie. He knows that they're not battle ready just yet, though eventually they're going to be called upon to do battle. And so as a wise general, as a compassionate father, he brings his army, this group of people who will one day face more conflict. He brings them by way of the wilderness because of his concern for them. God's continued presence brings with it God's continued concern. God's continued presence brings with it God's continued direction. I can't afford, I don't want my people to return to Egypt, God said. And so, in verse 21, it says that he went before them. It's a participle, and it has the idea of constant action. This image, this pillar of cloud and pillar of fire going before the people extends the representation of Israelites as God's battalions, this great general going out and leading them into the battle. Wiersbe reminds us, if you permit the Lord to direct your steps, expect to be led occasionally in paths that may seem unnecessarily long and circuitous. Remind yourself, God knows what he's doing. He isn't in a hurry. As long as you follow him, you're safe and in the place of his blessing. God led his people. And as God was leading his people, they were making progress. It didn't seem to them that they were making progress, but they were making progress. Progress as defined by their leader. Progress as defined by their God. It was a progress that was purposeful. It made sense when viewed from a distance. Sometimes we're so close that we just can't see, we can't discern. And as we follow God closely, we're so close to him, we can't see the bigger picture of what God's actually doing with us. But God sees, God knows, and he's making sure that we are making progress, and we're making progress purposefully. It doesn't always look straight, but it's always the right direction so long as we're following our God. And then God's continued presence brings with it God's continued progress. It says in verse 20, they moved on. They moved on. Verse 21 says, in fact, they traveled both by day and by night. There was nothing that could hinder their progress so long as they followed their God when their God moved. Joseph says, hey, when my God's on the move, I want to go with him, whether it's just my bones or if it requires me being in a prison cell in Egypt, or the responsibility that attends to rising to the throne. Joseph says, when my God moves, I want to go with him. And Moses trains the children of Israel that when our God moves, we must go with him, because God is never going to leave us. He might go out in front of us and we don't follow, but us being separate from him is our fault at that point, not God's. He'll never leave us. He'll never forsake us, and he'll never lead us in paths that don't make sense eventually. God is making progress in your life today, my friend, even though it may not look like it, even though it may not feel like it. But it's God's kind heart that brings both you and me into the wilderness. In fact, it was God's kind heart that led his son into the wilderness. For 40 days, being without bread, being tempted, because he knew there was a greater conflict that was to come. God prepares us for that greater conflict as he leads us into the wilderness. So, as we come to this part of the story, stepping out in faith is never an end in itself. It's only the beginning of the adventure of a lifetime. That is, an adventure that begins and ends with God himself. Because God does what he does. Because he is who he is. Everything that God does in your life is meant to acquaint you with your God. And stepping out in faith is just the beginning. And it's going to require you to step out in faith again and again and again and again. And the more we do, the more we learn who our God is and who we are as the people of God. I trust that you'll find this adventure not to be burdensome, but to be a delight as you find his yoke easy, his burden light. Let's pray.